Do you want to do a roll call then, Ingrid, and see if we have quorum? Oh, it's Jonathan and Alan. Hi, guys.
Oh, yeah. I think we've got quorum now, so that's good. Okay. So we have Alan. Oh, yep. There she is. Badar.
Hi, everyone.
Alessandra from MTO.
Hello.
Daryl Shipp. Obviously, Lori and Michael are here. Sabir is here. Shane, Taran from Region of Durham.
Hi, everyone.
Daryl Van Morsel.
Hello.
Hello. Stephen Tufts, Walter Garrison, and Jonathan Weedle. And Councillor Bradford has just arrived. And and Ashley Millman. Ashley, where are you from?
Hi, everyone. I am here on behalf of Councillor Brad Bradford, who will be joining us in a moment.
Oh, yes, he's there.
He's great. There too. Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, no matter. Thank
you. Awesome.
Oh, and we have Mr. Ivan Batty here as well.
Excellent. Hi, Mr. Batty. How are you today? All right, so we're going to get started then. Welcome, everybody, and thank you very much for your attendance today. It's a couple minutes after 4, so let's get going. Let me just give myself a second to get to my notes here. So we do have 2 new members who are voting members on the committee. So the City of Toronto has appointed Councillor Bradbrook to the committee as a voting member, and Councillor Michael Ford will serve as the alternate from the City of Toronto. So, Councillor, welcome to the committee today, and Ashley, nice to have you here as well. The agenda for today's meeting has been circulated, so I will ask if anyone has any changes or additions to make to that agenda, and if not, I'll ask for a motion to approve. Which is always more awkward, so if I can have, so Badar's moving the agenda, any seconder? Jonathan, thank you. And any discussion or comments before I ask for the motion to approve? All those in favor? Any opposed, please speak up. Excellent, so we have our agenda approved for today. Just want to review the minutes from the last meeting. They were also circulated with the agenda, so that was our minutes from December the 1st. Just a point that there were some challenges with the recording from our last meeting. So if there were comments that you had made that were not reflected in those minutes, please do let us know and we'll make sure that they are updated. I know Ingrid did her best to try and, from her notes and from the recording that we had to produce the minutes. So any comments on the minutes before I call for the vote? Jonathan? No, okay. You're moving the minutes?
Sure, yes.
Okay, thank you. And if I could have a seconder, please. Badar, thank you. I got you 2 on my screen, so I'm just going to keep going to you guys. Any discussion on the minutes? All right, motion to approve. All those in favor? Any opposed? Please speak up because I can't see everybody. Right, the minutes are approved from December the 1st. There was a one item continuing on from the last meeting minutes. We did have a request that the link from the Government of Canada website be provided, and that was the link that provides more information about instructions for travelers and guidance on traveling during the pandemic. And so that link was sent out on December the 17th. So I hope everyone did receive that. So moving to our regular items, we did forward on our consultative committee update to you. I'm just going to turn it over to Michael Mandel just to hit some of the highlights for you. Over to you, Michael.
The high notes. Yeah, so you mentioned, just welcoming Councillor Bradford and Councillor Ford to the committee. So in many ways, they're the lifeblood of the Toronto City Council. So really pleased that they can join our committee. A reminder that the GTA's annual public meeting is on May 5th. So we'd encourage you to participate. We'll send you login instructions closer to the date. The GTAs, so we're going to make a presentation tonight. It touches on many of the same themes covered in the newsletter. So COVID impacts, an update on our healthy airport measures and testing programs, and our ongoing conversations with every level of government. So I'll leave that information for the presentation. But if you haven't had a chance to go through the newsletter in great detail, I'd call your attention to three things. In February, we brought on board Dr. Edward Wasser as Toronto Pearson's Chief Medical Officer as part of our continued commitment to employee and passenger health. So I'm really pleased to have Dr. Wasser on board. Our President and CEO, Deborah Flint, was a guest on the TELUS Talks podcast, so I think that's worth listening to. There's a link in the newsletter. And in collaboration with the Toronto Airport Workers Council, we've launched, I believe since the last meeting, we've launched Pearson Works Online. It offers resources and workshops on topics such as job search, financial planning, mental health. So really important when you think of all the laid off and furloughed airport workers. So just wanted to call your attention to those articles. So maybe I can turn it back over to Lori for the presentation.
Great, thank you. Any questions on the consultative committee update that was circulated or anything that Michael's raised? Right. Michael, are you going to share the deck online for everyone on the screen?
I am. That's the plan. So let me just call it up now. And give me one second.
You want me to do it?
No, I think I've got it.
Just okay.
Give me one sec. Technology. It's a beautiful thing. Here it is. Can everyone see that?
Yes. Perfect. Yep. Thank you.
It's a bit of a ladder.
All right. So as Michael said, I mean, we wanted to provide you with an update where we're at with testing, I mean, and hygiene and measures that have been taken at the airport to support the health and wellness of not just those who continuing to need to travel, but, you know, as we look forward to when air travel can resume. It was something that we identified, you know, really early on that there's a need for us to make sure that the experience that people have, they feel safe and that their health and well-being is protected. But also, there's a tremendous number of people that work at the airport. Our numbers are diminished right now, but we have frontline workers that we want to make sure we're continuing to protect. I know we've had a chance for many of you to tour the airport and see these firsthand, so some of these things will be familiar to you, but we'll dive into them, and there are some new things around testing and what we're thinking about in terms of our principles for restart at the right time, of course. So, Michael, I'll get you to jump in.
Yeah, can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, yep. I can.
Okay. So you can see the agenda. It's really straightforward, I think. So we'll just jump right into the actual presentation. Lori mentioned, you know, and I don't think it'll come as a surprise to any of you. Like all airports around the world, Toronto Pearson has felt, you know, the really unprecedented, devastating impacts of COVID-19, impacts that extend well beyond our airport. Really, when you think about the wider aviation, travel and tourism ecosystem. Globally, airports are anticipating a loss of $100 billion in revenue. At Toronto Pearson specifically, total passenger traffic is down 88% year over year in the third quarter of 2020. And if you can believe it, that was better than the second quarter when passenger traffic was down 96%. So our annual results are expected tomorrow. And, you know, then you could see, I don't think they're anticipating they'll be much better in terms of passenger traffic and some of the, you know, huge revenue declines that we're facing and difficult decisions we're facing as an organization. So that information will be available tomorrow. But as many of you know, GTAA is a not-for-profit, non-share capital corporation. Nearly all of our revenue depends on the passenger. So that's why those passenger traffic stats are really important. There isn't a part of our business that hasn't been impacted. When you think about food and beverage, parking, retail as examples. We've had to make the very difficult decision to reduce our workforce by almost 30%, and our partners have had to lay off over 13,500 people. So, you know, when we look at when travel might recover, with travel restrictions and quarantines in place, passenger volumes aren't expected to recover until after 2024, around 2024, 2025. You know, if there's a piece of good news, right from the very start of COVID, Toronto Pearson was called on with our air carrier partners to repatriate thousands of Canadians, keep that critical cargo moving. You know, when you think about medicine, medical supplies, and food. And in this way, the airport continues to be that vital link in Canada's supply chain. Year over year, dedicated cargo flights are up over 60% at Toronto Pearson. And we've been actively bring our partners and goods movement sector together to talk about how we can support this critical function in our economy. So the movement of cargo and critical goods, and to talk about how we can address older, less modernized parts of the supply chain. Of course, you know, we're out talking to every level of government about the relief needed to keep Toronto Pearson competitive and support Canada's recovery, really, particularly as you see governments around the world investing directly in airports. You think about the recent announcements in the United States of $8 billion in relief funding directly for airports, which brings the total to closer to $40 billion. And we continue to push for a science-based phased approach to reopening international travel beginning in May 2021. And I think, obviously, you know, that's led at the federal level. They will absolutely play a leadership role there, but there's a role for the province and municipalities to play as well. You know, we did receive a full waiver of airport rent for 2020, and we're looking for that to be extended to 2021 and 2022. When you think about the way our Toronto Pearson has invested in critical infrastructure, whether that be terminal infrastructure or in the surrounding communities, if we're going to make those necessary investments and stay competitive, then we need that airport rent waiver to be extended into future years. You know, we're thinking about how we can with government, incentivize travel and tourism. So is that, you know, tax incentives to get people traveling again when, you know, the airport is safe, I would say. And so when the government and public are ready to travel again, how do we incentivize travel and tourism? And of course, you know, invest in that critical airport infrastructure, low touch, no touch technologies, and the next phase of the airport segment of the Eglinton Crosstown West extension specifically, but just better regional transit connections into the airport. So I think many of you won't be surprised to hear us talking about better regional transit connections into Toronto Pearson. And so those are the conversations we're having with government at the moment. I think we're all eager to get Toronto Pearson back to that 50 million passenger airport it was before, you know, pre-pandemic. The airport facilitated 50,000 direct jobs, 300,000 jobs in the airport employment zone, so second largest employment zone in the country. And how do we do that? I think it starts with a focus on the airport as a healthy place for employees and passengers. We launched our Healthy Airport Commitment in June of 2020, putting the health of passengers, employees first. We took guidance and inspiration from global best practices from airports around the world and from the governing bodies for the aviation sector. And this approach has been recognized really around the world. We're the first in Canada to receive Airport Canada International Health Accreditation. And we were just recently awarded Best Hygiene Measures in North America by ACI. Among other things, I think it's our approach to innovation and what a healthy airport can look like that sets us apart. And Lori mentioned, I know a lot of you have toured the airport firsthand, so I won't spend too long here, but we've had some exceptionally positive feedback from passengers about some of these innovative measures, you know, including autonomous floor cleaners, the way we're using UV light for disinfection in high traffic areas, the use of probiotics in our washrooms to eradicate bad bacteria, and a duct system that offers real time, so you can see in real time what the air quality assessment is like. So that's available in the terminal and online. And I know this attention to health and safety has been picked up by many, if not all, of our airport partners. So air carriers, as an example, have invested heavily in air quality, you know, onboard aircraft, increasing cleaning regimes and food service protocols. So yeah, really proud to partner with them there. I'm going to turn over to Lori to talk about some of the testing programs we have in place and a restart framework that we're thinking about for air travel.
Thanks, Michael. As I mentioned, we recognize that protecting the health and well-being of both travelers and workers was going to be key to the expectation of travelers going forward. We also know that with this pandemic, the role that testing could play to help support travel in the future was going to be key. We worked early, in the middle of last year through into the fall to support testing happening at the airport. And in January of this year, a voluntary arrivals testing started. Actually, I should mention that even before last fall, remember we talked when we went through our tour, there was the McMaster Health Labs arrivals testing study that was completed last September and October, testing people on arrival day 1, day 7, and day 14. And that's really important data that's now being used globally. I was told today that Heathrow has put that in their information package that they're submitting to the UK government in terms of their restart roadmap. It's part of the package of materials that the Government of Canada is using when they talk to their expert panel that Health Canada and the Minister are using to get advice in terms of managing the border. So it was really important work. And then that rolled into the testing that started on January the 6th, where people could volunteer to be tested on arrival. These were international travelers. On the 7th of January, the pre-departure test was added. So that's the test somebody has to take prior to getting on a plane inbound to Canada. They have to have a negative PCR test before they can get on a plane to Canada. Arrivals testing became mandatory for Ontario on February the 1st. There was then a change where international travel was then funneled through just the big four airports on February the 3rd. So while, and that's Calgary, Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. So all the only airports in the country where international travels are permitted to arrive is those four. And then the mandatory hotel requirements with the testing on day one on arrival, and they're given a kit and take it home for a day 10 test, began on February 22nd. So with all of this testing, one of the things we do have is lots of data that's being used now to assess and understand what's possible going forward. We're in the middle of a health pandemic, and obviously there's other criteria that governments and health officials will be looking at in terms of vaccination rollouts and the community cases of COVID, third wave, new variants, and all that is important. But this testing information, we know a lot more about the virus, and we know a lot more about tests. Just to dive in a little bit to so that you see the process for an international arriving passenger, you know, before you get on a plane coming into Canada, you're asked a series of health screening questions, your temperature is taken, and as I mentioned, you have to prove that you've taken a PCR test and that it's negative 72 hours before travel. Then when you arrive in Canada, you have to do that health declaration again in the customs hall with CBSA and Public Health Agency of Canada support. You need to prove that you have a quarantine plan in place that's acceptable. You come into our facilities after you clear through the customs hall. Anyone who is exhibiting any kinds of symptoms or any concerns, they're moved separately by FAC. But all asymptomatic passengers with their negative tests on arrival and screening questions answered will move out to be tested. We have set up testing facilities in both Terminals 1 and Terminal 3 where people get their PCR rapid test. It's supervised by a nurse. And then they move to, they're given a 10-day kit as well at that point, and then they move to their quarantine hotel. So that program has rolled out with additional hotels being available since it first started February 22nd. I think we have more than 18 hotels now around Pearson that are being used for arriving passengers. Passengers need to wait in the hotel till they get a negative test result, which is taking on average about 24 hours, some a bit longer, but most people get their results within 24 hours. And at that point, they're permitted to proceed to their place of quarantine for the remainder of the 14 days. So that process is running well. I mean, there's still some challenges on transportation, getting to hotels at times, but it's sort of evolving daily and getting better. Something else that we've been working very diligently to stand up is more testing for our employees. And so there's a number of, two studies that we have launched, and you might have seen an article in the paper talking about, with some funding we received from the National Research Council, we are standing up two worker studies. One is an antigen study where we have a pool of employees that are volunteering to be tested three times a week. We're looking to grow that pool to about 500 employees, and right now we're sitting with about 300 employees who have volunteered to be part of it. And so that will help to identify any workplace issues of concern and identify any cases quickly and move people into proper public health care. But it's also helping to show the role that an antigen screen done on a regular basis can help to do in a workplace and in a large workplace like the airport. That's open to not just GTAA employees, but any airport workers across the airport. The second one hasn't yet started, but it's expected to be started in the next week or so. And this is a test that will do both a rapid PCR. So right now, the PCR test that a passenger is doing on arrival, the test is sent to a lab, the results come back in 24 hours. There are new, and this is a Health Canada approved rapid PCR, so we were setting up a lab at the airport where the test results can be completed within 2 hours. And what we'll do is a PCR-based test and then an antigen test and trying to compare the results to start a prove the efficacy of that antigen test. The rapid PCR is proven to be just as effective and efficient as the gold standard, as they call it, lab-based PCR. And again, this will help us to identify any workplace spread and have a very quick identification. So that should get going very soon, and that will run for about 8 or 9 weeks. These studies will both have reports produced and published. The airport worker study is being done in conjunction with University of Toronto and some epidemiologists, and so they'll be producing reports that will be, again, produced publicly for additional learnings. Many countries around the world, just like Canada, requires a PCR test for passengers to come here. There's many countries that require passengers to be tested before they will be allowed to travel there. So we're also wanting to provide testing for those travelers outbound. Right now, the United States permits an antigen test, so the departing passenger process is being stood up to do, again, that rapid PCR and antigen test. Right now, it's happening for just those U.S.-bound travelers, of which there are not very many right now, but there still are a number of essential travelers moving into the United States. And so they can get that antigen screen at Pearson now. It's just a lot quicker and more efficient to get that test taken right at the airport. It's the antigen screen is a 15-minute result, so you can get that and then carry on for your flight. So we're hoping to stand that up for additional departing passengers later in the month. Maybe I'll just pause there because there's a lot of information on both the passenger testing as well as the worker testing, and see if there's any questions from committee members. Okay, there are none. I'll move to the next slide. These are just some photos showing you. So the right-hand side, that is the on-site lab that's doing both the the rapid PCR as well as the antigen testing on site. And then you can see some photos of the testing areas in the terminals as well, in both Terminal 1 and Terminal 3. There's other things that we've done as well to help support the health and well-being of our workforce. There's many measures that we have in place for workers that have involved how we manage scheduling people's days in the office, how we deploy workers, the requirement for face masks. We required everyone entering our buildings and workers to wear a face mask before it was required by the government. And obviously that physical distancing changes to manage the requirements to keep people that 6 feet apart. We also are working with occupational health and safety management systems to make sure that the principles of internal responsibility systems and the plan of that sort of do, check, act cycle is maintained. And so that's an ongoing process with both ourselves and those worker committees. We have a trial that we have rolled out. So our technology partner at the airport is WePro, and we've worked with WePro on a wearable device. So we have about 1,000 employees now that have this wearable device that alerts them if they're within 2 meter distance of another worker, and it buzzes so that it reminds people to keep their distance. But it's also tracking the frequency and duration of any contact. So it does provide data to help support if we do have a case where we can then go back into the database and do that contact tracing through our human resources, and it helps to support that contact tracing. Very early on in the pandemic, we did launch a COVID case log. It's available on our website. And so, you know, GTA is one employer at the airport. There's many other employers. We have 94 other companies now that participate by providing information about any cases among the workforce so that we can do the proper case management and cleaning and hygiene and what it takes to make sure that we're managing the business properly. So we have had 224 cases reported since the log started in mid-2020. And we can provide a link to that if you like. It's available, as I said, on our website, and we work with LISPAC and Peel Public Health on that. We're also very much turning our minds to vaccination. So both in terms of working with the province to ensure that our frontline workers are getting vaccination available to them as part of the phase two rollout, but we've also worked with Peel locally with the International Center. As some of you may know, we own the International Center. We've worked with our tenant that operates that facility, and it's been made available as a mass vaccination site for the region of Peel. It's important for us that we're being a part of the solution and making sure that the community's getting access to testing and vaccination. Something else we would be very anxious to do is actually set up a vaccination site at the terminals or at our facilities as well. So that is something that we're talking both to the region and the province about right now as well. Many airports around the world are seeing their frontline employees being vaccinated on a priority basis, but they're also setting up vaccination sites in their terminals for their workers, for travelers, and even for general community to come in. Vancouver stood up a vaccination site. They have a really interesting model that is actually calling back laid-off aviation workers to work in the facility. So it's that benefit of providing work for people who are currently laid off at the same time as you're helping to support the role of the vaccination to the community. So that is something we've talked to Vancouver about to understand how they put that together to see if there's an option for us to pursue that too. We are turning our minds, when the time is right, we need to be ready for travel to resume. We appreciate where we stand today, and there still are public health challenges with respect to wave 3 and variants. We have put public health first in everything that we are doing, and guided by science and a risk-based system, it takes time. Like, you just don't turn a switch and travel restarts. There are workers that need to be called back. There are planes that have been parked that need to be, tested and certified as fit to fly. And there needs to be some clarity and certainty around what the rules are going to be so that we can all plan. We've watched other countries around the world put in place plans that have sort of key metrics and triggers that provide, you know, certainty for planning purposes, knowing that there's metrics that need to be achieved before you can sort of move to that phase of restart. You know, right now we have our Canada-US border closed. We're closed to foreign nationals, you know, with the measures in place with hotels. And that testing regime, there's a way that we believe you can start to look at a phased restart that sort of starts to peel back the onion, if you will, in a safe and phased way, particularly as vaccination rates continue to rise. Our most vulnerable are being vaccinated. We were told last week that the province expects adults in Ontario to be fully vaccinated by the end of June. We know that our neighbors to the south expect vaccinations to be completed for the bulk of their population by the end of May. You know, we had a flight coming in last week from Tel Aviv where 50% of the people on the flight were vaccinated. And yet they're being required to pre-departure test on arrival, and go to a mandatory hotel, even though they've been vaccinated. So we think there's an opportunity to put in place a plan that looks at how a vaccinated traveler versus a non-vaccinated traveler would be treated. Not to say someone can't travel unless they're vaccinated. It's a matter of what the regime would be and what the testing requirements might look like, and how they would be different for vaccinated versus a non-vaccinated. And as Michael mentioned already, we're also looking at, you know, how we invest in those low-touch technologies and things like that digital credentials, so that we can know that, you know, if Lori McKee is traveling, we have a digital way to confirm she's been tested in advance, and we have a way to confirm her vaccination status so that it can be built in. Using paper and having a paper-based system is not a recipe for a smooth flow, and so we need to get to a place where we've got that process in a digital way that's been integrated into the back-end systems for the airlines and, you know, kiosks for check-in, border crossing, and the like. And that has to be aligned globally. We're a global system. People are traveling around the world. You know, just like after 9/11, there were measures that were brought into place to support safe and secure screening of passengers and their bags, carry-on, and checked bags. We need a similar approach to what are those global standards going to be. And to date, we've got a patchwork. So we need to get to a place where there's a unified approach to travel in a way that's safe for us all, but it allows for the movement of people and goods again for our economic health and well-being. So the next slide just talks to some of the high-level principles that we've talked about that a framework would need to cover. I think I've covered many of these things. You know, the way that you can use testing and vaccination to help support a reduction of quarantine. And that's based on science and a number of studies that have been completed, including the McMaster Health Labs work that we did last year. Digital health credentials I've talked about. You know, we had this great problem. When we were a 50 million passenger airport, we were using technology to move vast numbers of people quickly through our facilities. You know, now we need to use that same innovation and technology, not just to move people quickly as travel resumes, but to do so in a healthy way so that we're reducing the times and touch that people have to have, the distance that people have to have with each other and with our officials and agencies that are operating in our facilities. So that frictionless travel is really important, and I've already talked to the common standards. So I think we can go to the next slide, Michael, which I think is the end. There we go. So I know that's a lot of information, but I hope it's providing a good overview for you. Michael, do you mind just pulling the slide down? It's just hard to see people's faces if anyone has questions. There is a hand function, so feel free to use the hand function in Teams if you have a question. There's also a chat function, so if you'd like to use that, and I'll just keep it up. So Jonathan, you've got your hand up, so go ahead.
Thanks, Laurie. Are you hearing the echo, or was that? Can you hear me well? Okay, good. So just a couple of questions. It was a lot of information. You mentioned, I think, that all foreign nationals traveling in have to go to a hotel for 24 hours. That's just foreign national, correct? As long as residents have a quarantine plan, they, no? So
foreign nationals are not permitted to travel. We closed our borders to foreign nationals last March. The only people that are traveling today are Canadians and exempt travelers.
So as a Canadian, you leave the country, you have to quarantine for at least 24 hours.
Right now, when you, as a Canadian, if I were to leave the country and come back in, as, you know, international travel, I would be required to have a PCR test before I get on the plane coming back home. I would be required to test at Pearson, then go to a hotel and await my test results. And then with a negative test result, I would go home for the balance of my 14-day quarantine.
Perfect. And then the second...
As a Canadian.
As a Canadian.
Yeah, we don't permit any foreign nationals, and we haven't since last March.
Perfect. And then the second part of my question is, we know the farming season is coming in. So temporary foreign workers is a big part of that landscape. What does that look like for that population?
Yeah, so temporary foreign workers are one of the exempt lists. And so there is a testing regime in place and a process for the arrival of temporary foreign workers. So we've looked at a process to manage their testing at the airport and then their travel to their employer where that quarantine happens. I got that right, Michael?
No, I think you covered it. And then further down the road, you know, one thing that we're exploring is potential vaccination, right? If there's a vaccination site at the airport, then do temporary foreign workers get vaccinated on site?
So this information on the travel and the mechanics behind that, is that available or can you share? We have a, so at the region, we have a working group that's focused on agriculture and agri-food, and we meet fairly regularly. Is there information on that that could be shared, that I could take back to that group?
Mm. We have right. We can share with you the flow of the process today for a temporary farm worker, a foreign worker, and so you can have that. And then, as Michael said, it is a conversation that was started just recently to see if there was an additional process to be put in place to help support the vaccination of arriving foreign workers as well.
Great, I appreciate it, guys.
I'll send that your way.
I see somebody else's hand is up. Who is that? Stephen.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lori. That was a very thorough presentation, to Michael as well. My question is, when it comes to the antigen PCR testing of employees, that program, I assume, is airport-wide. It's just not GTAA employees. And secondly, are you tracking those employees who are not allowing their workers to take part of in that process with paid time? Because one of the things we're hearing is that employers are not allowing their employees to take part in that process on paid time. They have to do it either on a break or lunch hour or before or after work, which is, I think, highly problematic. And if we're trying to fight a pandemic. And also, just it is difficult because, of course, you're not necessarily going around testing people. People have to go somewhere to be tested. And the airport, of course, is a big space, and you may work quite a fair distance away from where the testing occurs.
So a couple of things that we're doing to encourage workers to be able to make use of the two programs. So one is that test three times a week, and the other, you know, if you think you've been exposed, maybe you're not feeling well, you can go quickly and get a test on site. You get your results in 2 hours, and so that would allow you to go back to work as opposed to, you know, go home and wait. But we are doing a lot of outreach to workers, workforces, and employers across the airport to encourage them to make these programs available to their workers and allow them to do so. I know that some of the time of day for the three times a week testing sites, in terms of the hours that it's open, has been a little problematic for some of our shift workers. So we are currently looking at that to see if we can adjust those times of day to make it more convenient. So those are a couple of the things we're doing, Stephen, because you're absolutely right. This is the middle of a pandemic. We would like and hope that all the employers at the airport would support these programs and encourage their employees to take part. Aaron's got her hand up.
Thank you, Laurie and Michael, for that very detailed presentation. A question about pilots and crew. Are those work groups, has that come up in your internal discussions or your conversations with stakeholders in terms of what the thinking might be around the potential introduction of testing requirements for pilots and crew?
At the current time, pilot and crew are exempt from the mandatory testing. Now, if a pilot or crew member decides they would like to be tested, they can. As well, if they want to be part of any of the employee testing, they can. Any decision to change that would be not ours to make. So I don't know, Ludwig, if you had anything further to comment. That's the current order in council right now. It does exempt pilots and crew from testing.
That's correct. It does exempt pilots and crew from testing.
Does that answer your question?
It does. I guess it was intended as a bit of a forward-looking question. Just curious to know if potential changes might be on the horizon from what you're hearing in your discussions.
Yeah. I mean, part of around vaccination is we are hoping that frontline workers, and that would include pilots and crew, would get access to vaccination in phase two, and so that would hopefully be a good line of defense as well to help support protecting them and protecting others in terms of any transmissibility.
Thank you.
Councillor Fonseca, nice to see you. Your hand is up.
Hi, thank you, Laurie. Thanks for this presentation. Actually, part of one of my questions was asked with regards to crew, was just asked. I did have one other question with regards to interprovincial travel. So if you're a Canadian resident, flying from any other province into Pearson, there are no quarantine protocols in place, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So from any province?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So some provinces have introduced, we hear lots about the Atlantic bubble.
Yes.
And so there are provinces who have elected to introduce their own measures. There's no federally, mandated requirement for interprovincial travel, and nor has Ontario introduced any for domestic travel.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions before we move on to our next item? Great. All right, so I think that takes us to the next item on our agenda, which really is our roundtable from members. What we wanted to do is go around, and Ingrid, maybe you can just go from the, use our roll call sheet and maybe go through our voting members one at a time. Does that make sense? We did send out to you two questions that we were hoping, because one of the things that has been so important in this pandemic is the learnings that we have from each other. I know that as airports across the country and across the world, in some ways, there's nothing like a good pandemic to reduce competition, because we're all just sharing information and learning from each other. And if somebody's got, I talked about that program that Vancouver has around using laid off workers, great example. But we're looking at airports around the world, studies that have been conducted around the world to help support testing regimes. And so if we can learn from each other, I think this forum creates a great opportunity to do that. The first question is just share with us some of the high-level impacts that your organization has suffered as a result of COVID-19, and then more about what your seeing recovery look like for you? I think Michael shared ours at the outset of our deck, but maybe we can go around the table, the virtual table, and just hear from each of you. Ingrid, do you mind starting with sort of the top of that roll call list and just do it that way, and that way we don't miss anybody? Did I lose Ingrid? Okay, give me 2 seconds and I'll pull it up myself. All right, I got it here. Okay, so Sabir, you are first up.
Thank you, Laurie, and thank you, Michael. It was a great presentation. At the regional appeal, there is a significant impact for sure, and I know Councillor Fonseca is here. So our region appeal is quite focused on a vaccination program, and our health staff are working around the clock. They are working on the COVID-19 issues, and the vaccination program is going very well. We have organized very well, and many of our team members or the staff from our other departments have also deployed for the vaccination program. As far as the recovery is concerned, as you know, we are still working towards the full vaccination program, and our own region of Peel, we are working home until September. Of this year from home remotely where possible, and the recovery program, we are working on it. Thank you. And actually, I have one more news to share that Regional Peel, we made an application for the United Nations Regional Center of Expertise, and I'm quite pleased to mention this today that Regional Peel has been awarded that designation. And Laurie, thank you for your support. Laurie and Michael, thank you for your support for the GTAA. So with this, we have designated the entire region of Peel, so cities of Mississauga, Brampton, and Caledon. And we will be working on the sustainability and focusing on the transportation, especially on the goods movement and sustainable transportation. Thank you.
Excellent. Congratulations. Thank you. All right. Badar, you're next up from Brampton Board of Trade.
Okay, so the overall operation at BBOT hasn't been impacted adversely from the client engagement or member engagement perspective. Things have been actually quite reasonable, although a number of our small to medium-sized business community members, and especially those in hospitality sector, have suffered quite significantly. So I think Board of Trade did a pretty good job pivoting and creating online content over the last 12 months, as a result of which we continue to see pretty robust engagement from the membership in our ongoing activities. And we continue to support the city in terms of its advocacy to relevant levels of the government in terms of easing some of the restrictions on the business community, although Peel continues to be in the gray lockdown status, which is continuing to make things difficult for our small to medium-sized business community members, and especially those, as I mentioned, in the hospitality sector. So for the most part, it's business as usual. The membership retention has been strong. The revenue is reasonable. We did lose a little bit of sponsorship revenue, but nothing significant. And we're hoping that as things move forward, we will be able to continue to work with the government to create a little bit more customized of a plan for Peel in general, but for Brampton specifically, so that we can start to address the needs of our SME sector businesses.
Thanks, Badar. It's really been impressive to watch how our boards of trade, all of them around us, have pivoted to move online and provide the same level of support, mean, I think we all miss getting together and seeing each other in person and that, you know, the sidebar conversations you get to have. But in terms of sharing that content and rich information that people are you know, need and really needed in the early days, I think all the boards of trade have done a fantastic job.
Rory, the Business Excellence Awards are coming up, and, you know, we're still providing nominations for international trade and investment space. I know that GTA doesn't directly engage in that space as an entity, but it facilitates that activity. And given that you have continued to operate over the last little while, I wouldn't mind discussing the potential to nominate GTA in that category for Business Excellence Award. So I'll take that up on the sidelines with you.
Sure. Happy to talk about winning awards. Thanks. I don't think...
You're on mute, Laurie.
Sorry, I'm on mute. I was just saying, Councillor Singh is up next, but I don't think he was able to join us today, Ingrid.
No, he's not here.
He's not, okay. So John Davidson, I saw John on the line. So John from Halton, you're next.
Oh, thanks, Laurie. Great to see everybody, at least virtually still. I guess with respect to Halton region as an upper tier organization, the impacts of COVID-19 haven't really been really as much on the financial side. You know, the province has covered us to a certain degree, and I think our local municipalities have had the revenue hit a little bit more than our upper tier, just in terms of the program delivery. But very much like Peel Region next door that Sabir was speaking to, it's really just... you know, galvanizing our efforts on vaccine distribution, which is, you know, sort of an all of government, regional government kind of effort for us. And I think we're starting to see some of the impacts of that, just in terms of the other, just the opportunity cost, or just the other impacts on other sort of standard operations that continue, but they're all vying for attention. If you like, and so we know that, you know, the most important thing we can do is to make sure that our residents get vaccinated as quickly and as effectively as possible. So that's really you know, and sort of the ever-changing rules and regulations, the advocacy that goes along with that, you know, in support of our small business community, and especially as Badir was saying, you know, the tourism hospitality area, which has been hit so hard, and sort of the ever-changing, you know, directions and nuances of that. We just put out a press release last night with additional instructions. We're in the red control zone. So our restaurateurs are able to open again and up to a maximum of 50 people. But we're adding some additional instructions on that. So it just becomes sort of a net new, what does that mean for us? So it's sort of a continuing education, not as less enforcement, but more education side of things. So I think it's been a long grind, of course, for everybody in your organization. The GTAA is certainly, you know, born a lot of it. So those are some of the high level impacts in the organization. You know, we're going through a regional official plan review. Just the fact that we can't meet in person has taken away on some of the engagement, public engagement that we'd normally have with that. And I think all the uncertainty around recovery, what does it mean for various markets? You know, we're sort of a land use based organization. And so what happens with the office market and what happens with work from home, et cetera, all those uncertainties do not make for easy planning for the next three decades. So I think that's one of the things that our council is grappling with right now. So I guess the key to our COVID-19 recovery is going to be around, you know, getting on the other side of this vaccines third wave. You know, we're keeping the lines of business going that are standard usual practice. It's some of the more esoteric parts of our business have had to fall off the wayside as staff have been redeployed. So I guess it helped us to sort of understand what's really important for the residents in our region. And Yeah, I guess that's the focus, I guess, and just making sure that we can get vaccination done and over with, and then we'll go on and move forward. So I guess that's my update.
Great, thanks, Jim. So I'm just going to name the next two so the person after can get ready. So Stephen Tufts, you're next, and then after will be Councillor Bradford. So Stephen, over to you.
Okay, I'll go very quickly. Again, the Toronto Airport Workers Council, we were pretty used to meeting together virtually ahead of time anyway with conference calls. So we've been just using our regular practice. We continue to monitor a lot of things. We're supportive of the GTA and a lot of their initiatives, especially when it comes to seeking federal government support and while safety and testing. There are some concerns we have about the way forward and the long-term impacts of COVID-19 on our workers. There are concerns, of course, of touchless airports, which, yes, robots don't spread disease, but robots also take away jobs. So that's, of course, something that we continue to look at. Overall, the new surveillance and tracking technology that Lori mentioned, that's an impact on our workforce as well. Again, however, we're largely a surveyed workforce to begin with because we wear rakes everywhere on the airport. So in part, many workers are used to that. We're really concerned about the persistent unemployment for long-term unemployed workers. The numbers that Michael put out there are accurate. However, there's other ways of calculating unemployment, and that is real unemployment. And that is the number of people who are still working at the airport but have had their hours drastically reduced or have lost one of their part-time jobs but are maintaining employment in one of the ones that are remaining. So that could be actually a low number if we look at unemployment figures differently. But that goes for the entire economy. The unemployment in this economy is always underrepresented by official statistics. So these are things that we're continuing to working with the airport on, especially on that long-term labor market adjustment, where now as CERB wraps up, as some of the other employment supports are winding down, people come to the recognition that they may not be hired back into the airport right away, given the length of the recovery. There's going to have to be other types of labor market assistance provided, and that may involve training for entire new jobs, such as in cargo, as Lori and Michael mentioned, or, of course, maybe training for jobs outside of the airport in warehouse and logistics. So that's what we're looking at. And lastly is that, as many of you know, I have another hat. I'm actually a full-time professor at York University, and COVID-19 has had its impact on post-secondary sector, as many of you well know, especially those who have students working from home. And that's been a big impact on all the GTA universities, especially my university, York, which is a commuter university, and where enrollment has declined. Almost all teaching is now remote with very few exceptions, and that has a revenue impact as well because students aren't parking, students aren't buying food on campus, et cetera. And we are also planning largely that there will be significant remote offerings in the fall of 2021 because we don't think vaccination will be thorough enough to open up completely. And the longer impacts for that sector is that remote teaching is here to stay. It's not going away. The shock doctrine experiment has worked, and there'll be enough buy-in by students and instructors that this type of teaching will be probably largely integrated into offerings for the foreseeable future. So that's enough for me. Thank you very much.
Interesting. Thanks, Stephen. Councillor Bradford, I know this is your first meeting, but anything to share on these two questions from the City of Toronto's perspective? Did we lose the councillor? I don't know if Ashley's still with us.
Hi, Lori. Thanks, everybody. I believe the councillor just stepped to the side to take an urgent call. I'm happy to circle back if there's others who would like to weigh in.
Sure. Okay. You know, we can come back to him as well if he's able to rejoin us. Thank you. Next is Brad Butt. I think I saw you sign on. Brad, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Lori. Thank you. Thanks very much. I signed on a little late because This is also Ontario Chamber of Commerce Advocacy Week, and we had our final round table with the official opposition this afternoon while this meeting had started, so I chimed in late. Anyway, thank you for inviting the Mississauga Board of Trade again to be part of this. I'll be pretty quick. Number one is, obviously, we continue to be concerned about Peel Region being maintained in the gray lockdown zone. This is 4 months now, so there are many businesses that have been absolutely completely closed for 4 months with really little or no financial support from the governments, and many businesses that don't qualify. So I would say that's been our primary concern over the last short while, is what we can do to be helping to support those businesses who have been completely shuttered as a result of the lockdowns. The second issue is a good thing this meeting is today. Our International Trade Committee met last Friday, and we actually had a printing. We're going to invite someone from GTA to come into our next meeting in April, but we're quite interested to know what the impact on all the travel restrictions and everything else is on international trade, what I would call travel, so that business level of travel. One of the issues that was brought up is all these Zoom calls are wonderful, and this is the way the new world is working, and we get all that, but there still isn't anything better than two business people getting together and shaking a hand because they've done a business deal. And it results in Canadian exports leaving Canada, hopefully on planes from Pearson Airport to whatever destination that they're going to. But that relationship has significantly suffered, obviously, over the last year. We'd be very interested to know, and I don't know how you quantify it, and I don't think we want to go out and hire some think tank to do this thing, but it would be interesting to know what the impact, and maybe even the impact in dollars has been for Canadian business people that have not been able to travel, or if they did travel, the cost of quarantining when they're back and all the other stuff that's going on, what impact that's had in Canadian businesses' ability to do business around the world. So, I mean, that's not a discussion for today, but I just thought it was interesting that a few of the members of our International Trade Committee raised that last Friday morning, and we're really looking for more information on what that impact has been. You have felt it through passenger travel, no question about it. But what have been the other incremental costs as a result of that? So we'd like to have a future discussion about that with GTA and our International Trade Committee. But I'll follow that up offline, Laurie, with you or Eileen or someone, and maybe someone can come to our next meeting and we can have a little bit of a conversation about that because I know it's had a significant impact for sure.
Yeah, and the starting point would probably be the economic impact work that we had sort of pre-pandemic that showed, you know, foreign direct investment and the impact on jobs and trade, because it's sort of the double-edged sword. It's the impact on Canadian business and their ability to trade, but it's also that foreign direct investment and the inability of foreign travelers to come here and consider their investments locally. How you actually figure out, you know, what's been lost. I mean, I guess a good starting point is what did it used to be, and we have some data to show that. So I'm happy to follow up with that with Eileen.
Great. Well, thanks very much. That's great. Okay.
So who's next? Aileen, Toronto Region Board of Trade.
Great. I thought I'd share an update on what the Toronto Board of Trade is working on together with the Federal Economic Development Agency for Southern Ontario on the safe reopening of three select business districts. And I think a number of you, or at least colleagues in your organizations, will already be aware of this. But three pilot zones have been identified, Scarborough, the Financial District, and Pearson. And the aim, the end goal, is to produce three separate playbooks that are designed for those areas to allow for safe reopening. And Laurie, you mentioned, you know, information sharing and exchange of insights during this time where everything is new to everybody. And that's really the spirit behind this project, is to gather insights from stakeholders, specifically those who have perhaps remained open throughout the course of the pandemic so far, and try to capitalize on some of those lessons learned. So they'll be tackling these playbooks in along four separate themes. One will be called Safe District, which looks at things like workplace policies and communication, managing exposure tracking, screening, testing, and vaccinations. The second will be Safe Buildings, so things like workplace ventilation, and looking into technology that's available for air quality monitoring. Transit, carpooling policies, and active transport. And then the fourth will be Safe Workplaces, covering topics like worker spacing, worker cohorts, signage, training, and communication. Pearson Employment Area Pilot Zone, in particular, there have been several meetings of late. There are the co-chairs of this group include Mayor Crombie, Jan De Silva from the Toronto Board of Trade, Todd Letts from the Brampton Board of Trade, and David Wojcik from the Mississauga Board of Trade. And I think that Eileen and Theodora from the GTAA were participants in some of the more recent roundtable meetings. So they've met already to discuss things like accreditations and certifications that are available to qualify COVID-related investments. They've had meetings with technology providers that can help with mitigating COVID-19 transmission risk. This week, they had a meeting on vaccinations and the implications within the workforce of adopting workplace policies when it comes to vaccinations for your employees. And the next meeting will be focusing on public transit with speakers from the TTC and Metrolinx on ensuring worker safety, specifically for those workers who use public transit to get to and from work. So that's a fairly major undertaking that is going on right now at the Toronto Board of Trade, with a lot of engagement from partners in this group as well.
Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of people around this table who are involved in that. It'd be a great opportunity at a future meeting potentially for us to dig in on that playbook for the Pearson Zone. And so maybe I'll just touch base with Eileen and just think through what, unless you want to suggest a timeline, what might be suitable for agenda for us.
I'd be happy to check back with the secretariat team at the Toronto Board of Trade. We have a draft playbook right now. I'm not sure what their final date and their go live date might be, but I can find out and we can see if we can align somebody to come in to present in more detail on it for sure.
Perfect. Thank you. All right, Jonathan, Region of York, you are next.
Thanks, Laurie. So I guess similar to Peel and Halton, you know, the region has been focused heavily on vaccinations recently and redeployment of staff as well to deal with a number of pandemic-related issues. We, too, are working from home, and I think the nearest or the earliest timeline we've heard for any kind of return to the office in some way is September, but that's continuing to be revisited. And then in terms of financial impacts, there were some, but I know that there was a recent announcement last week from the province, I believe, and I know we're in the middle of budget deliberations now, and council is in session on Thursday to talk about what our budget looks like. So I'll learn more myself on Thursday. The impacts in our business community, I guess, is similar to what we've heard, not just here in the GTA or in Ontario, but across the country, where the small businesses are really feeling the brunt. And when we look at tourism, arts and culture, accommodations and food services, this is where it's really being felt. But on the positive side, we also know that some of the tech-related firms, even the small tech-related firms, have been doing well. So, you know, they've been able to take advantage of the situation. So at least there is something positive happening from that side as well, but it continues to be a challenge. And that's actually one of the reasons too I was asking about the farm worker side, because we have a number of farms in the region as well, and temporary foreign workers are leveraged by that group. So that's kind of where we are. One of the things we did in the region to help our businesses that were in the tourism related field was we had a campaign when we had reopened, you know, back in August last year, called Ready When You Are. And that was really focused on helping with consumer confidence, you know, to get people back out. Of course, we went into lockdown and now we're in the red zone. So, you know, a little bit more open than Peel, but really all the significant safety concerns are still there. So that's kind of where we are. And just fingers crossed that, you know, more vaccinations quickly and, you know, put this behind us.
Sorry, I'm struggling for the mute button. Yeah, amen to that. Thanks very much, Jonathan. Do we have anyone from, I think Taran is here from the region of Durham.
She had to leave. She had an emergency at home. Oh, so, Chris Fonseca, she actually got disconnected from the meeting. She was trying to join back in. I actually haven't seen her come back yet. So the next would be Shane and then Oscar, but I think Oscar just left for another meeting. So Shane, you're up.
I am a resident of Toronto, so I do not have the same input as many of the people around this table. I have a law firm, which is a small business, and I could say, knocking on wood, we've been very fortunate through all of this. We've managed to adapt, and part of that is just the way business culture has adapted, which is, haven't had a choice. The court system's adapted. Most lawyers, while working with one another, have. It's taken a bit of time to get used to doing everything virtually, and it's funny. I feel like it works. I just miss the luxury of meeting with people, and I do realize meeting with people probably is a luxury that I took for granted for my entire career. So our impacts have been relatively minimal compared to a lot of other sectors. And I do think there might be a long term, like, it's not easy to mentor people when you're working remotely. And I personally, as someone who has a degree of responsibility for that, I really do make an effort to stay in communication, but it is still not as easy as it could be. And the key to COVID recovery, I hope everyone can be vaccinated soon. I don't know when that will be, and I believe, as much as I'd love to get back to normal, there's a lot of other people who should be vaccinated first, because it would save, like, I mean, in all likelihood, me being vaccinated and the people at my firm, it would be great to get back to normal, but I care about saving lives first, and I think that's what we have to look for. And once all the people who are truly in harm's way for health reasons are taken care of, then I'll be the first in line, and I hope things resume soon. I don't know when they will, but I know from my business side, as a small business, I'm saying we're not even going to set a date until we know. We want everyone to be safe, and it's not just the people working with us, but it might be the people who live with them. And in terms of a future recovery, I'd like to see things get back to normal. I will tell you, on a personal note, I don't think I'm going to be back in the office 5 days a week ever. I just realized it's kind of nice working from home on some things. So that's all that I have to say. And I would also just add that I see what our airport is doing, and I think in light of remarkable challenges, it's doing an excellent job. And I hope that continues.
Great. Thanks, Shane. And you're right, I don't think things will ever be the same. Well, our new normal is a pivot to whatever the new normal will be. I mean, I think we all crave seeing each other, but at the same time, there is a newfound appreciation and understanding of how remote work can be done.
That also, if I'm going to travel for anything, it'll be personal, not business. I know that's not what everyone wants to hear, but I know want to, like, it's the personal connections that I really miss with business. As I said, it's more of a luxury, and it doesn't mean I don't want to do it, but if things are more difficult, I could see that being what makes the difference in the end.
Yeah, and that sentiment is what, you know, we're also picking up in some survey work that we do. So, you know, the appetite and propensity to want to travel again is more so around leisure and visiting friends and family than it is for business purposes in the early days, and likely to be more about domestic than international again early on. So airports that have more international service will see a slower recovery, and it's a question mark exactly what that business travel will look like going forward. So it's we'll have to all sort of keep our eyes on it and understand what that means for our businesses. I think John Davidson who's talked about planning these days is challenging because there's so many unknowns for us still that we're watching to understand exactly, you know, what the future is going to hold. And so it's a very challenging time.
Yeah, I like to plan, but I realize there's a time for planning and a time where you're probably spinning your wheels a bit by planning. And I found in this, with all the uncertainty and all the unknowns, plan how you can, but I can understand why deferring certain plans makes sense.
Right. I see Councillor Bradford has been able to join us again, so maybe I'll turn it over to you if you can share for us your thoughts on sort of what's up at the City of Toronto in terms of impacts as a result of the pandemic and as well sort of recovery.
Sure. Yeah, happy to do it, Lori, and thank you to the team for the update for the roundtable. That's great. I apologize. I just had to jump on another call. Appreciate Shane's comments and sentiments there. I mean, I could echo a lot. I think the world of work has changed, and this has sort of been a catalytic event. We talked so much about sort of remote work and telecommuting. My background's in urban planning. That's the work I did before I ran for council. And so that was always the evolution of cities and the evolution of work was always sort of a topic of discussion. But this has, of course, been an accelerant for that. I do think we will see people return to the core. Folks will come back to cities. But there will be more flexibility and perhaps more open-mindedness about what work looks like and where it takes place. You know, so it's kind of the two questions, what are the high level impacts for our organization, City of Toronto? Well, you know, first of all, foremost, of course, like municipalities across the country, and many organizations, just serious, serious financial challenges. In our case, in Toronto, the budget impact was around $1.7 billion in pressures. We were able to maintain city services without cuts and reductions, found close to $550 million in savings. But, you know, we certainly needed support from other levels of government, like many industries. From an equity perspective, you know, this has been, as everyone says, the pandemic has exacerbated the existing fractures and challenges in our society. You know, we see a digital divide, food insecurity, you know, folks who are not able to work from home. If you're a frontline worker, and I don't just mean in healthcare, but for example, all the folks working at the airport, if you're in food manufacturing or production, work from home hasn't been an option. And we've seen those folks have higher infection rates of COVID. We've seen COVID infection rates, of course, in neighborhood improvement areas and where folks don't have the same socioeconomic means. It has not been felt equally across the city. And as we put our minds towards recovery in the months ahead, that equity lens is going to be more important now than ever. And then, you know, transit is something I'm very passionate about. I'm on the TTC board, and, you know, ridership at one point was similar, not as bad as what you dealt with respect to flights. I saw 88% down, but we were in the 80% down, you know, at points in 2019. And, you know, one of the downsides of having the largest percentage of revenue coming from the fare box in North America means that that was where our budget pressures were really coming from. Nearly $700 or $800 million of that was TTC related. So the Safe Restart funding has been crucial for us. There has been such a significant change in the way that folks get around the city. And if you look at transit, folks often think about higher order transit, the subways, LRT going out to the airport. But in fact, leading the recovery on the transit file has been our surface transit. It has been our buses in the more disparate parts of the city where folks have, been going to work the entire time. So we need to think about where we're driving those dollars, making those investments, improving service, making it safer for people, and reflecting investments in a way that folks are using the service right now is going to be really important. COVID recovery. Intergovernmental relationships and partnerships and collaboration has frankly never been more important. I think we've seen just how precarious Canadian municipalities are. The amount of downloading that has happened over the decades, and the amount of services that Canadian municipalities are expected to deliver, all on a property tax base, that has been really, really challenging over the course of the pandemic. And we've had very productive working relationships with both the provincial and federal governments over the past year. And that's been really critical. But I think, that kind of goes to the next point about funding and decision making. Certainly, I'm going to be accused of having a very Toronto-centric perspective, but I do. And our role, and I would include that in the GTA here, this region plays a significant role in not only the Ontario economy, but the Canadian economy. We are the economic engine for this country. And, I think there have been times and moments where we would like to see more autonomy to drive some of the decisions that directly impact, our residents, our budgets, and in fact, the region. Connectivity, that's going to be really important. Some folks have said this is a time to hit pause on transit. I think it's actually a time to double down on that investment. We are strained from a transit capacity and a mobility capacity because of a lack of investment over the previous decade. So it would be a huge mistake to kind of pull up the stakes right now. I think that connectivity, especially for commuters, is going to be important as we come out of this, and we're also going to see people moving in different ways. Those hyper local neighborhood trips, work has moved outside of the core, which has also been a policy objective for the city for many years. We have a number of urban growth centers in the GTA. We obviously have urban centers in different municipalities, and we need to recognize that it's not just a downtown commute every morning and afternoon that we need to be planning for and building for. Folks need ubiquitous transit access all day, all direction. And certainly those connections to the airport are very important. The equity piece, again, going back and having an equity lens to our budget, having an equity lens to our policy decision makings, using data to direct funding investments and new programs. That's something that we've always kind of had an eye towards, but I think, again, it's more important now than ever. And, lastly, it's on the top of the fold of the star today, and, the housing and affordability piece in Toronto, but of course across the entire region. If you go back to 2009 and that financial recession, you compare it to other cities across North America and the North America context, Toronto was very, very resilient, much more so than a lot of other comparable cities. I think that we will continue to be a city and a region that attracts international investment and talent because of the quality of life, because of our education, because of our values. As long as we're bringing folks to this region, which we ought to be, it will continue to have pressure on our housing market. And we really do need to work with provincial and federal partners for capital dollars for housing projects, provincial government for important tools like inclusionary zoning, where we can bake in some affordability to those new projects that are coming forward. But housing affordability, if we can't get housing and transit right, that is going to jeopardize our sustainability as a city and a region. And now is a really good opportunity for us to hit reset and think about how we're doing that. So those are some keys to the recovery from my view over here in Beaches East York.
Wow, not small challenges either. Those are some really big, important, you know, housing, transit, the equity or inequity of this pandemic and the way it's impacted us as a community are interesting. One of the things, you know, Michael mentioned connections to the airport, and transit is one of those sort of equalizers that we've talked about for many years in terms of making sure that people can get to work and access, you know, that people have access to jobs and employers have access to employees. And while right now it doesn't feel like transit's a problem because our roads are not super full and everyone's, many people are working from home, but that was very interesting to hear that given the number of people who aren't able to work from home, given the types of work that they do, what that's showing to you in terms of where investments are required from a transit perspective. So we are very much thinking about transit because it kind of feels like that problem will be upon us soon, and those same challenges we used to face, maybe a little bit different, but still will exist. So thanks very much. Those are some really big issues for us all to chew on.
Yeah, and thanks, Lori, and I'll try and bring more of an airport perspective next time. I just got to get schooled up on, you know, how we can help and what we're working through at the GTAA. So thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to have you. Daryl Shipp.
Daryl had to leave.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
Yeah, so
I know Oscar had to leave. Savick?
Walter and I don't think Savick made it actually.
Oh, okay.
I didn't join.
That's our voting members. So we've been able to get through the voting table. Unless I've missed somebody, please let me know. But I think we've run through the voting. I know we are almost at time, so maybe what I could do is go by.
We have half an hour, Laura.
Oh, we just six.
Only 5:30.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So we have Walter, Ludwig, and Alessandra left.
So Walter is sitting in Mississauga from Economic Development.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so our Economic Development Office, we've... I was just going to say, so our Economic Development Office, we've pivoted to provide our services online, of course, in the last year. I deal with our aerospace manufacturers, and outside of Montreal, Mississauga really has the heavy hitters in Canadian commercial aerospace, amongst other aspects of aerospace. And of course, we've seen layoffs, you know, in manufacturing and MRO, and a lot of the companies have been successfully using the Canada Emergency Wage Subsidy. We do meet regularly and virtually with a number of our key aerospace employees. Of course, there's been a loss of a number of highly skilled workers who make far above the manufacturing wage average, and quite frankly, far above the average salary of a lot of workers. Some have been able to find work in the industry in the defense and space sector, which has actually proven to be quite resilient during the last year. We've also done a lot of work advocating with other levels of government to support our aerospace companies. It's probably going to take the greater part of a year for the inventory. You know, you mentioned parked planes. There's parked parts as well, too, for that to work its way through the system. And so manufacturers, like if COVID was done tomorrow, they wouldn't just be able to ramp up again. So this is a real challenge. And, of course, lack of business travel, that's been mentioned. It's prevented our companies, many of them, from commissioning systems and making timely business decisions if they've got global locations elsewhere. So obviously, you know, there's also a challenge to all manufacturers in the city because they are essential workers. So dealing with workplace outbreaks, and we've been working to help with that. Of course, the key to recovery really is vaccination in phase two. And so our EDO is working with Peel because we've got such an intimate relationship with our manufacturers to provide them the connections and information they need in their comprehensive planning for that phase two rollout of vaccines. You know, we've got many companies who've got expertise and experience in on-site flu vaccination clinics. So we'll see how the vaccination in phase two actually rolls out. Certainly there is that concern about proportional vaccine distribution from the province, especially to hotspot sectors, and Peel would certainly be considered in that realm. And a number of businesses, have, much like you say about on-site vaccination. They've reached out to our office and would host a COVID vaccination clinic if this option was available. So a number of our businesses would do. I would say 80 to 90% if I asked them, they would say yes. So we've got, you know, companies with locations in other provinces and other countries, and they're certainly going to compare the vaccine rollout in Ontario and in Peel with other jurisdictions that they're located in. So I think that's good. So thank you.
The other thing maybe we'll sort of mention is that the construction on the Bombardier facility is continuing. So that project's underway. That's for their Global 75 business jet. So that's a good positive aerospace project that is continuing to move forward. And so we look forward to hosting those jobs at the airport once that facility is up and running.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, can I ask Walter something?
Of course.
Sorry, Walter, so in addition to being the past chair for Brampton Board of Trade, I currently serve on the board of Canada Turkey Business Council. Has the EDO office ever considered supporting virtual trade missions?
I guess, Bidar, what I can say is we've actually participated in a number of virtual conferences right now with respect to aerospace development. Virtual trade missions, we have not done that yet, but that's an interesting thing to think about for sure.
So we're working on a project doing a virtual trade mission between the ANCRA chamber, which has a very large, so Laurie, this is of interest to you. So just like Ottawa, ANCRA, the capital city of Turkey, has a very large defense as well as aerospace sector. So I'll touch base with you on the sidelines to have a conversation about maybe how we can loop you into that conversation.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks very much.
No worries.
Great, thanks, Peter. Ludwig from Transport Canada, next.
Hi, everybody. For the most part, there's been a whole of Canada, Government of Canada response to the pandemic, as many of you are aware. It's been driven really by finances and financial, out of the Ministry of Finance. But for us as a department, the safety and security aspects of our business continues, whether it be the air, marine, or rail modes, where we are largely based as an inspectorate community more than anything else. We were on the road to digitization for a couple of years prior to the pandemic coming on. It tested our systems in many ways and enabled us to continue on with our work and ensuring that Canadians are safe and secure in their travels, wherever they may be, on whatever mode they may be. Our organization rolled off to telework very quickly and remains on it. The regional office that I sit at is currently going to be going through a major renovation. And if this is an indicator of telework being a success, the floor space is being cut in half, literally. So many of us are deemed non-critical. We will probably not find ourselves back into the office except to be at a remote workstation every now and then. We've had a new minister, Minister Mara Algabra, and engagement has been a challenge in this environment, preparing him for meetings with stakeholders, which are all done virtually, has been challenging at times, but it's been productive, and we continue to ensure that as a department and as officers within the department, we continue to collaborate, coordinate, and talk to our partners out there in the world of transport in all modes. Critical services continues. We have provided some support to the sector vis-a-vis employment income funds as well as support to remote airports to continue to receive the kind of service, the goods that they need to sustain life in remote parts of Ontario and Canada. The air sector recovery package is one that is quite significantly to roll out quite significant amounts of dollars. It's a confidential, high-level discussion beyond my pay grade, so can't comment on it. That is expected to take flight at some point in time. I just want to end by commending the GTAA for doing a tremendous job at Pearson. I have been tracking, following all of the air sector across Ontario, and you are truly a leader in the world, and the awards that you have received, the two of them for health safety as well as the Airports Council International Award, speaks to the kinds of level of service that you folks provide at the GTAA. Regionally, a lot of the airports in the Southern Ontario system continue to suffer. The air was a bus for many, and unfortunately, in the absence of air service, airports are struggling, be it the small airport in Sioux Lookout, or be it some of the airports in the shadow of Pearson, Kitchener-Waterloo, London International, Ottawa. There are some serious issues that have to be addressed, and I think you can be assured that the issues and the advocacy and the briefs that you forward to the department and to the government are being paid attention to. I'll end right there.
Great. Thanks, Ludwig. I mean, we obviously would love to welcome the minister out as soon as we could. We've had some virtual time with him, but I know he's expressed an interest when the time is right to come out and maybe see some of our worker testing or tour our vaccination site with the Region Appeal partnership we've got there. It would be great. And we know, I mean, airports are suffering. It's been a long 13-plus months, and the financial aid package has not materialized to date. So as much as some of our airports in our shadow are suffering, just a reminder, I mean, the fact that we can go to the bank and borrow money doesn't mean it makes us healthy coming out. It means we're an airport that's not invested for more than a year now because we've had no money to do so, and all we've done is add debt. So how competitive will we be going forward with airports that we compete against south of the border and others globally? So I know you know all that. Just wanted to put that on the record that it is a big concern that, you know, Canada's, we've had an airport that was the sixth most connected airport in the world that really gave Canada a competitive advantage and this region a competitive advantage globally. And we do worry that we lose that. I think we're to our final speaker then. I'm just looking, Ingrid, at the list, and I think the only other person, I don't know if Caroline from Ministry of Tourism was able to join.
No, she didn't. The only person left is Alessandra from MTO.
From MTO. Alessandra, welcome, and I'm sorry, you're our final speaker.
Hello, everyone. Again, thankful to be here. I know Lori had touched on it before, but just, you know, I want to recognize the testing program that has been taking place at the airport and how it's been important to help quickly identify and stop the spread of the virus in the province. As for what the province has been doing, we recently announced, I think it was in January 21st, that, you know, we're working with the federal government to provide up to $11.1 million to support small air carriers serving remote First Nations communities in Northern Ontario, and that this investment will help ensure access to essential goods and services during the pandemic. Also want to point out that we are also investing $14.2 million to support operations at our 29 remote airports in 2020 and 2021. This also includes an additional $4 million this year to support the continued safe operations. And I would also like to, you know, reiterate what Lori said and all the challenges all the airports have been experiencing. And, you know, we will be continuing to work with our federal partners and moving forward and how we can support the sector.
Shoot, I'm on mute. Thanks, Alessandra. And I know tourism's not here from Ontario, but folks may have heard that Minister McLeod recently launched a task force that Tim Hudak is leading with respect to tourism and recovery. And so we are feeding into the work of that task force in terms of some next steps. There was a panel report last year that we participated in, and that led to the, you know, one of the recommendations that's come to pass, which is the tax incentive for tourism. But thinking about some of the next steps that can be taken and how we can be a part. I mean, the front door to many inbound tourists to the province is through our doors at the airport. So we're looking forward to participating in that forum as well. We do have a couple budgets coming up. The provincial budget is tomorrow, and the federal budget was just announced today, will be April 19th, so we'll be anxiously watching those, as I'm sure many of you will as well, in terms of what additional support higher levels of government will be providing in terms of recovery. So that will be of great interest. I do want to acknowledge, as Ingrid did off the top, Ivan Batty, a member of the public, has joined our meeting today. So if there are no further updates from committee members, I would like to turn to Mr. Batty to see if he has any questions or comments for us as a group.
That's fine. Thank you. It's a good meeting, Laura.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Batty. Nice to see you. All right. Mike.
Laurie.
Oh.
Laurie, it's Bedard.
Yes.
It's, I'm sure you've seen the announcement from Government of Australia that they are subsidizing domestic travel. Has there been any conversation in Canada around something similar?
Now, as Ludwig said, there is a discussion happening with the federal government and the large carriers around an aid package that is, you know, happening, we understand, and we hope it comes to some conclusion soon. Interestingly, we have seen a number of provinces start to provide some support for airports. The province of BC, about 2 weeks ago, announced funding for airports, and I believe it was PEI last week also did. So we're seeing provinces actually step in and offer some support as well. So, all right. Michael, Ingrid, do we have anything else on the agenda? When is our next meeting?
Next meeting's June. Pardon? Yeah. Oh, there you go, Ingrid. You're probably going to say
that. That's right.
All right. So by June, this will be a very different conversation, I hope. Vaccination rollout is definitely going to help us all, I think, in terms of our businesses and keeping us all healthy and safe and getting things back to what is close to what new normal will look like. So I wish you all well, and let's keep in touch. Come June meeting, if you have any items that you'd like added, I mean, we'll definitely follow up with Toronto Region Board of Trade and maybe that playbook item. But hopefully there's a restart plan that's in full flight at that point. Take care. Nice to see everybody, and we'll sign off.